financial planning and security can sometimes be seen as a moving target. The rules change constantly, and you need guidance to stay ahead of the market moves. This is the Labenthal Report with Michael Hartzman and Dominic Tavella, with additional insight from industry veteran Jordan Kimmel. We'll break down the news, trends, and overall direction of the markets, telling you what may be coming next, investment opportunities, and what to avoid. Now, here are your hosts, Dominic Tavella and Michael Hartzman.
Good evening, everyone. I am Michael Hartzman, along with my partner, Dominic Tavella. And today is Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. Good evening, Dominic. How are you?
Good evening, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm all right, thank you. No complaints. So we're thrilled this evening to have Professor Siegel back with us. We had him on March 9th, and he promised to come back in April. And lo and behold, he's a man of his word. And we're going to spend about a half hour with him, along with Jordan Kimmel, our chief portfolio strategist. But it was really interesting when I looked at where Professor Siegel's call was. When we had him on March 9th, he was pretty optimistic then, and he was you know, very hopeful about the market and the market's direction. And since then, the S&P is up 6.6%, the Nasdaq is up 6.7%, and the Dow Jones is only up 5.5%. So we've had a pretty good 5 weeks since he was here last, and so far so good.
Well, he's normally an optimistic person by nature, and he's jokingly called a perennial bull on the markets. And I think on the health of and future of our economy. But he's made a pretty bold call in the last couple of days, and I cannot wait to get into the meat and potatoes of that. I think from our last interview with him, it was without a doubt one of our most popular podcasts, right?
Yes.
Mike, we had so much commentary, and to be able to get him back and continue that conversation and maybe put a few more smiles on people's faces, but very much looking forward to this.
Yeah, I don't want to blow the lead, but I was very pleased when I went to CNBC Thursday and saw the headline about Professor Siegel and the 30 minutes he got to spend on live TV. And as I said, we're thrilled to have him this evening. And furthermore, you know, the head of the Federal Reserve, Jay Powell, was interviewed on 60 Minutes Sunday. And for Federal Reserve Chief Dom, he was also very optimistic, very open how he feels about the economy. And I'm anxious to hear what Professor Siegel has to say about that as well.
Well, and Mike, to your point about the way the markets have behaved the last month, but specifically the last week, we had a very nice week again in the markets, and it seems like the reopening trade and the economy getting back to a normal footing is on track. We had a little bump in the road today with the announcement of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, but there's enough data out there already that the other two vaccines approved in the country are going to be able to make up for that, and we should not hit too much of a speed bump going forward. But it really all has to do with the economy and how quickly can the economy open up and life, whatever the new normal is going to be, when the new normal is going to start and be a continuous, non-interrupted event. So that's what we got to look forward to and what the markets are looking forward to.
It is, but the other thing we always have to deal with is how the media treats these stories. So like you, I have the financial news on all day in my office, and the headline I see as I'm on with a client is WFH trades are rallying today on J&J news. So first it took me 30 seconds to figure out what WFH means, which is work from home. So
that's what you came up with.
So
I'll have to get you to text me in the future. That wasn't what I came up with. But go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
I'm pretty sure I'm right. But you might have another variation of that. But nonetheless, that's what we call headline risk, right? That there's this headline and then all of a sudden, oh my God, we're all going to be locked down again, and all of a sudden the work from home stocks, the Pelotons and the Zooms have a good day, which I'm not complaining about, but it's so difficult on a day-to-day basis to try to manage money in a 24/7 news cycle.
And Mike, I know you get the question all the time. I do. You know, how do you manage through all this? And the key is to, number one, keep that steady course, right? But then sometimes events like today also represent opportunities where if you were looking to sell something, now here you can get rid of it. If you're looking to buy something because it got beat up a little bit, it gives you an opportunity to buy it. So I choose to look at the glass half full. It was definitely headline risk this morning, but I think it also, in our case, gave us some opportunities that we could take advantage of. And grateful for that?
Yes. No, we are absolutely grateful for that. And then Dr. Fauci was on TV, I think at 2 o'clock, saying he doesn't expect the shot to be shut down for more than 10 days or 2 weeks. And I'm thinking, well, what does that accomplish? So, you know, we'll try to parse through all of this with Professor Siegel, and we will be right back after the break with Professor Siegel and Jordan Kimmel.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Tune in to The Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, with co-hosts Ron Baker and Ed Kless. Ron and Ed will show you how to recognize that wealth is created by intellectual capital. It's all in the possibilities that we can create and that are created for us. These possibilities are destined to be discovered by human imagination and through the service of others, creating a brighter future for all of us. The Soul of Enterprise is heard live every Friday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Influencers Channel, with a replay on Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to the Labenthal Report. If you're listening to the show live, join in on our discussion with questions or comments at 1-866-472-5790. Again, that's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to contact@labenthal.com. Now, back to the Labenthal Report.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Labenthal Report. I'm Jordan Kimmel, and it is a delight to bring back on Professor Jeremy Siegel, the renowned professor at Wharton and senior advisor to WisdomTree. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Happy to be here, Jordan.
Well, we spent a delightful last half hour. We're going to go a little bit further, but I have to just share again, you know, as the author probably of one of the most influential books of our era, Stocks for the Long Run, I'm going to ask you to also talk about another one of your books, Future for Investors, because I think it's there's some things going on in the market right now that deserve that. But, you know, I know you made a little bit of extra splash. We see you almost every day, but you made a big splash last week. Sometimes things are taken out of context. Let me let you kind of discuss your big call on the market where we are right now. It's a great time to jump in right there.
Thank you, Jordan. Yeah, I was on, you know, normally I'm on 5 minutes on CNBC. I guess they thought I was making headlines because they get me on for 25 minutes. You know, of course, as you know, I've been very bullish. I've been bullish since last summer because of the monetary stimulus, unprecedented. We talked about that, you know, a month ago, and it's still going. Biden's going to get about half the pie that he wants on the stimulus. There will be a tax increase, but there's so much in the pipe already, it almost doesn't matter. That's going to push this economy forward. So I was very, very bullish. And And first of all, I said, they played me a clip. You guys were talking, you know, Michael and Dominic, about Chairman Powell. And they played me a clip from him. And he said, I said, he's the most dovish chair of the Fed I have ever heard. I mean, it was like, oh, you know, inflation, what, me worry? No. Okay, I mean, I thought, you know, you're supposed to be cautious about it and on the lookout about it, but okay. But this also goes with the thesis that I've had. Then I said, you know, this liquidity is going to push the stock market. It's not at all done. And then I kind of made a statement, we're only in the third inning. Afterwards, I said, you know, we're probably in the fifth or sixth inning. You know, we've had a big rise since a year ago, more than a year ago. I mean, the bottom was hit March 2020. But we're not anywhere near over. I mean, the liquidity is still going to feed into the economy and the strength. So I think this bull market, you know, doesn't have a, you know, they said it was a headline 30%. I was comparing it to with late last year. But I you know, I definitely think this market has another 15-20% to go. Upward, 25 even. I mean, no one, you guys know, can actually pick exactly what the top is. Will there be a bear market in the next 3 years? Yeah, probably. But that doesn't mean to get out now, because you got to enjoy this. This could go up way more than what a bear market in the future will take away. It's as far as a type of stocks concerned, I mean, I'm still very partial to the value group with the reopening. I mean, I think there's three arguments for that. First of all, the reopening, I think, favors value. Secondly, I believe that the search for yield, because where are you going to get? You got to get in dividend paying stocks, because you can't get it in the bonds. The long bonds are going to depreciate, because I think interest rates keep on going up to try to protect against inflation, and the cash flows from stocks protect against inflation. And third, and this is a new scenario, you always used to worry about rising yields hurting the value stocks or the dividend paying stocks, but the narrative has changed, and now rising yields are seen to be a potential burden for the tech stocks because of their cash flows being so far into the future. And, you know, we all know the math that the further in the future, a discount rate has a bigger effect on the price. So that narrative, in any case, I know interest rates are going up, but I don't think they're going to match inflation. And so borrowing is still negative in terms of real cost. And you know, I want to be short, you know, money fixed assets, and I want to be long real assets. You guys jump in, and what do you agree with? What do you not agree with? What do you want to ask me? I'm here for you.
So, Professor, what you're speaking about is exactly what I think is most positive, but also most negative. So we're looking at the amount of money currently sitting literally in bank accounts, and it's somewhere between $4 and $5 trillion. We have the last two programs that were approved by Washington that the money's not even spent yet, and they're still talking about number three.
Yeah.
And the total amount of money that's come into the stock market in the last 3 to 6 months exceeds that came into the market over the last decade. And I'm not saying markets aren't going to go higher because of all this liquidity and flows, but when do you start getting worried about it?
Well, you know, I mean, I follow the monetary statistics. I mean, completely. This is... And the expansion of the M2 money supply, which is the broad-based money supply, in 2020 was the highest in the 150-year, yes, wow. 150-year history.
Wow.
That we have had. It's astounding. And I went back and checked it. Higher than World War I, higher than World War II. This liquidity is going, that's why I'm predicting 5-6% inflation this year and next year. And in fact, what I said was that over the next three or four years, I think the price level could be 20% higher by 2025 than it is, or 2026 than it is today. Wow. And I think stocks will surmount that height. Of course, that won't be a real gain if inflation goes up. I think wages are going up. I think the demand for labor is going to be incredible. I hear that restaurants preparing for the boom are, you know, they lost a lot of their chefs and service people, and now they can't hire them back. They're offering,
they can't find them. They can't find them and have them come back.
Yeah. They're offering premiums. I think the whole $15 minimum wage is going to be, as I guess the word is nugatory, I mean, not binding, because that's about what you're going to have to pay to get someone. With the demand that I see coming forth. Now, what is that? So will the Fed have to act against it eventually? Yeah, they'll have to raise rates eventually. But that's way down the road. probably not even 2020, 2021.
Wow.
Professor Siegel, you just took the words right out of my mouth. The one thing that I continue to worry about is this disconnect between Chairman Powell, and he reiterated it again on 60 Minutes Sunday evening, where he keeps saying that he's going to keep rates down to 2023, and Wall Street doesn't seem to believe him. So at what point do these two things kind of bump heads?
Well, I'll tell you what it is. I mean, yeah, you know, the truth is the Fed and doesn't have, in fact, very few other people have really ability to forecast very well. They're going to be just bumped around and make decisions by events. At first, you know, they're, as inflation runs ahead of their schedule, they're going to say, oh, special circumstances. Oh, we have to average it to a little above 2 because it was below. They're going to make a lot of excuses and whatnot. And then finally, people are going to say, just a minute, this is getting out of hand. Then you're going to see the 10-year go above 2% and then 2.5%. So the market is going to add pressure later on. And then finally, the Fed will capitulate and they will not be able to hold the rates fixed through 2022 until 2023 by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, the dot plot that was presented in last month's, honestly, was ridiculous.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that out loud.
Consistent with everything we know about economics. There's no way you can hold the rates down that way with the boom that even they expect, although I think it's going to be far greater than what they've put on paper.
So let me jump in here, Professor, if I may, because everyone's afraid of that first interest rate hike, even though we think it's a couple of years ago. But once we see the first hike, we'll start to hear things like three steps and a stumble, that it's not the first interest rate even that really takes the punch bowl away. What you're talking about, I would be sweating out of my head if I was a bondholder right now.
Yes, and I would too.
Bondholders need a place to go.
Absolutely. I mean, Jordan, 100% agree with you. There's no question about that. Bondholders are going to take the brunt. I wrote an article actually last June that said, who's going to pay for the war on COVID-19? The bondholders.
Right.
And the government bondholder, particularly. I mean, if you want to know the truth, how do you reduce the national debt? It's not that you start running surpluses and pay it off. You inflate it away. Now we're not going to inflate it all away, and I'm not calling for any sort of double digit inflation, as I said before. But I'm calling for mid single digit inflation for several years. It might be a little bit more 1 year. Less than another. It's basically going to be the dictates of the market that are going to force the hand of the Fed, and history shows that pretty much what's going to happen.
So let me jump in with a question if I can here, because I want to bring it back to your real powerhouse, and we know what you're saying makes sense. We all agree with you. The problem is people read the papers and they can't think for the long run, stocks for the long run. They can't think that long. And in fact, what's happening right now is with all these SPACs are coming out and all these IPOs, we're getting calls from clients. Should I jump in this? Should I jump in that? And I want to bring out The Future for Investors, one of your books that really addresses this head on.
You're absolutely right on that. I mean, actually, you know, I say that when the book starts out with the story of actually IBM and Senator of New Jersey, which became ExxonMobil, where I said, what would you want to pick in 1950 if I told you that IBM beat Senator of New Jersey, ExxonMobil, on every metric of growth, dividends, dividend payouts and everything else? And you know, everyone would say, well, of course I wanted to own IBM. And by the way, this was way before the recent kind of downturn in IBM or ExxonMobil. And it turned out ExxonMobil, even though it didn't beat it by total return by a mile, because it was priced reasonably. So a reasonable price in the long run very often trumps a better growth opportunity. And now a better growth opportunity, which is not, you know, discounted in the market, of course, will do better. But, you know, I say technology is amazing. Look what we're doing here. I mean, we, you know, we wouldn't even thought that what we're doing here is would be possible a year ago, but we are. But I think it's priced in the market. That's the difference. Well priced in the market in many cases. So technology is beautiful. Technology is great, but you know, the subtitle of Future for Investors is the tried and the true triumph over many of the growth opportunities that people have.
Right, super hot IPOs that come under way too much heat.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, listen, there's a lot of gambling. I mean, you know, we always hear about these people who hit the home runs. We want to hit a home run. We want to be at that cocktail party saying, I bought X at five and now it's 500. These people who have said that, they don't tell you how many Ys they bought at 500 or they're now five.
Dr. Siegel, back to our original conversation, isn't that the issue with all this liquidity? We have the SPAC phenomena now where investors are literally buying this asset class, and you ask them, what did you buy? And the answer is, I don't know. What does it do? And the answer is, I don't know. They haven't told me yet. And as a registered investment advisor, as a fiduciary, where it's completely disclosure and transparency, this is so alien to me, but this is part of that liquidity problem, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah. Much, well, you know, I've often called the SPAC craze the stock version of celebrity chef. I mean, I'm the one, I'm the great one, just give me the money and I'll find the stocks. You know, it's interesting, Dominic, what you talked about. I think in Future for Investors, I even mentioned that. I mean, I wrote that 15 years ago. But it's mentioned in a number of places. During the South Sea bubble, which you're talking about 18th century, the mania was so much, they did have it. There was one guy who quoted, he did a stock about, just give me money, I'll find the investments. I mean, yeah, it was a company that will spend and multiply your money by 100%. He floated it and went to 1,000% premium on the first day. And this was 250 years ago. So, you know, a lot, you know, it's different clothing, but it's the same thing. I mean, there's been speculation throughout the history of markets, and there always will be. And there'll be big winners and there'll be unfortunate losers.
More losers.
No, many more losers than winners. We've already actually seen a lot of that SPAC, you know, has come down. There will be always some winners there. You know, it's a market I don't play in. I let me, you know, I always tell people, listen, you want to play with 10 or 15 or 20%, and depending on what your position is, and you can afford, have that as your play money. You know, you either want to go to Las Vegas or you want to play in this market. This is your play money. But then keep it separate from the serious money that you want to use for your children's future or whatever other purpose you want.
Right.
Professor Siegel, I'm going to ask you to make believe you're in your Wharton classroom right now. For the benefit of our viewers, a SPAC stands for Special Purpose Acquisition Corp. And the phrase that makes me more nervous than SPAC is when I see a company has gone public with a blank check.
Yeah, the blank check companies.
Yeah, the blank check company. So could you explain what that means for the benefit of our listeners?
A lot of them are, which sometimes companies will take over virtually defunct companies that are selling for 2 cents, but they're already established, so they're approved, and then they transform themselves into anything that they want. And if they have a name associated with it, that is that person. They say, "Oh yeah, give me the money." In a way, it's a blank check company. It's kind of like a SPAC. You take a shell of an existing company. You could form a new one, but that requires all sorts of rules. It's easier just to get yourself into a shell of another company. And at that particular juncture, you're established. You may be trading. As I say, celebrity chef, give me the money.
So Dr. Siegel, as a follow-up, one of Dom's favorite examples 20 years ago was Pets.com and DrCoop.com. So how are these SPACs and these blank checks, is it just a reflating of that bubble from 20 years ago where people are just speculating on things and have no idea what they're actually buying?
There are similarities. The truth of the matter is I do not believe that this market today, despite the fringe of speculation in SPACs and a few stocks, couple of stocks, GameStop, but which I still don't, and a few of those others, is not as speculative as it was in 2000. Okay. We are not there. I wrote a lot about it, that episode. The S&P 500 tech, the tech sector of S&P was selling at 80 times earnings. I think we're 30 now. Mm-hmm. It's much more reasonable than that. SPACs, they say give me money, but they haven't lost it yet. If they find something, fine. Obviously there's, pet.com was, it was selling at, several billion dollars with zero revenues and very little business plan whatsoever. These are, I'm going to try to find a plan. Now, a lot of this money gets, if you buy it at $10, you get it back if nothing is found. So in a way, I don't think today's speculation is as rank as it was in 2000.
Thank God for that.
I could jump in here for a second, and Michael asked you to go into the Wharton classroom, if you will, and I have to bring up, I know it's, I'm not getting it exactly right, but Business Week once named you the best professor in the world.
Well, the best, they did a survey, and that was in 1994.
Well, hey, it is what it is. And I think the students are still getting the benefit. But
Thank you.
You brought this back to full circle where a lot of people, we as advisors and money managers, get these calls, should I buy this hot IPO? This is what we're thinking about. But you brought it full circle that the market is not in the dangerous place it was 20 years ago. No. And there's tremendous cash flow and tremendous opportunity in most of the sectors. So we like to tease the little bubble spots that pop up. But I think your point of saying there's a lot of innings left, and there's a lot of gains left, speak to the fact that a lot of the market is absolutely fairly valued, if not opportunistic.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, you know, in today's interest rate world with the liquidity there, you know, we're selling at 22 times next 12 months operating. And actually, I think we're going to exceed. I think the next 12 months operating earnings what about 180 and 180, 185. I actually think we might actually do much better because I think this, as I said, I think the spending is going to be much stronger than people expect with the liquidity and the cash that is going to be spent this summer and beyond.
So just jumping on that comment, Professor Siegel, I'm hearing, starting to hear numbers that show earnings could be over $200. I mean, it's whispering right now, but it looks like we could be approaching that number. And then when you look at today's valuation, it doesn't seem quite as outrageous, right?
Yeah, I know, absolutely. And don't forget, I mean, a lot of firms took write down. I mean, the banks were kind of took write downs. I think a lot of them are their reserves write downs are going to be much less now because of all the, you know, basically we've covered it. Now, look at, I mean, I read an article, the world has changed. I mean, like, commercial buildings in Manhattan are selling at 25% less than they were before. But at the same time, single family homes or beach homes and even condos are not selling at that much of a discount. And as we know, we're in a real estate boom. Which is exactly what I would expect in a 2% interest rate environment when inflation looks like it could be 5, 6, 7. I mean, I knew that it was going to go right into the real estate market, into the stock market. Nothing has surprised me actually that we've seen in the last 3 or 4 months. I mean, I didn't know about SPACs that would be the vehicle. I didn't dream about the Robinhood traders and GameStop. I mean, there's been these things on the fringes, but the basic story, which affects, you know, the lion's share of assets that we see there, have gone in the direction that I absolutely thought they would last summer.
So Professor Siegel, what I'm really also pleasantly surprised about, it seems to me for the first time in a long time, people are talking about the market and not talking about Washington, D.C. at all, which is a breath of fresh air. And we tell our clients all the time that it really didn't matter who the president was. What really mattered was interest rates and the position that the Fed takes towards interest rates and inflation. Would you agree with that?
Well, I we can all argue about what good the government can do. It can do bad. It can mess things up. You know, there are pluses and minuses. I mean, I don't like the corporate tax hike that I do think we're going to get. I mean, that is going to trim $10-$15, I think. We're not going to get 28. I think we're getting 25. I do think there's going to be a tax hike that is going to be passed. I do think there's going to be other tax hikes, but it's not going to be. It's about half the Biden package, which was what I actually said last November on the election day, is that, you know, Biden wins and if the Senate does turn dim, and we didn't know until January about that, but that he was going to get about half the package. But it's more than offset by the stimulus that he's providing. I mean, the market liked that more than they worry about, okay, he might take us $10 off that earnings, you know, going forward. The stimulus is at least as important. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the most important thing, oh yeah, the Fed is by far more important than any moderate government. You know, had there been radical, you know, Bernie Sanders, I mean, that's another story. But moderate government on either side, the Fed is totally dominant there. I agree with you.
Thank you.
Well, it turns out, you know, again, you know, we hear the dollar's soft, the dollar's strong, rates this. But, you know, we looked back and I look at Dow, the crash of 87, and the Dow was 1800 back then. And you know, it's about stocks for the long run. And I break it down. There's only really two choices. You could either lend your money or you could own something. And lending your money right now feels really not like the place to be.
And it should be.
Right.
And I agree with you.
What to own.
You don't want to be, I mean, right now, I think, as we said, the worst position. I said last year, the worst asset class in 2021 was going to be the long-term treasuries. Well, so far, it has been.
I think you called, Jeremy, for Professor, for the 40-year bond market to come to an end.
I said it's over.
I was in the business. We were yielding 8% tax-free. When you go treasuries yielding zero, I think it's time to get on a new horse.
Jordan, I think a year or two from now, we're going to say, what were those people thinking that bought bonds at 0.5% in 2020? What could possibly be in their heads?
Well, there's going to be some structural changes, and I think the size of the bond market, and we talk about other liquidity, if the bond market starts to come into the stock market, it's even more fuel.
Yeah. I mean, and as they say, I'm not worried about 1 or 2% increase in the interest rate. If inflation 3, 4, 5, it still pays to borrow. You're not going to be deterred by a couple percentage points of interest when you see prices going up at 4 or 5%. Then you're going to say, "Yeah, I want to be a borrower. I don't want to be a lender." Lock in whatever you can. I still think mortgage rates are low, and I think that is part of the thing that is fueling this home demand, is people kind of think, oh yeah, this is a time to pay back with depreciated dollars in the future.
But Professor, I've heard you mention now a couple of times, and I don't think the markets are expecting, but you mentioned a 4 or 5% inflation rate.
Yeah, that's above market expectation.
I think that is more than likely in the short run. I'm hoping later on in the year when the pipeline opens up, the supply pipelines open up, the factories open up, that would put some damper on that number. But a 4 or 5% inflation rate is going to be shocking to these markets.
It will be, but what do you want to be in then? You're going to say, oh my God. And you're going to say, I don't want to be in bonds. I want to be in real assets. And stocks are claims on real assets.
And do you see the sell-off
and in fact, levered stocks, the stocks that have, I love corporations that have borrowed 20 years now and have locked in 2% on their coupon. They're even better. 12 months ago, everyone talked about strong balance sheets. Don't take into borrowing. That's when you had cash flow problems. Now, I like the companies of locked in long-term financing.
Professor, I'd love to see the U.S. government float a 100-year bond right now and lock it in. I don't think they're going to get to do that. I've heard about 50. But you know what? We are unbelievably bumping up on a break here right now. And yeah, we have to really just thank you for the gracious time you've offered. There's a reason they call you the Wizard of Wharton. And I would have to say the Wisdom Tree has a great, great asset with you as a senior advisor. Our clients are thankful. We're all thankful for you taking the time tonight. And we wish your predictions straight on, but we know stocks are right for the long run. And I really recommend everyone take a look at that book and read it.
Thank you, Jordan and Michael and Dominic. It's been great. I hope to get to see you guys again soon.
Thank you, Professor. So. We really appreciate it. Stay safe.
Yeah. We hope so. Hey, so let's wrap it up. It will take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Labenthal Report. And a big again thank you to Professor Siegel. We will see you soon.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Today, enterprise technology is both strategic and global. Each week on CTN CIO Talk Network, IT thought leaders from around the world share their experience with listeners as they discuss with Sunjog All how they are trimming costs and partnering with business to innovate and help IT become more competitive, better care for customers, and improve the corporate bottom line. If you want to keep up with IT thought leadership, listen to CTN CIO Talk Network with Sunjog All at CIOTalkNetwork.com.
tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
Partner Up with Amy Carroll focuses on getting more of what you want and need more easily with less difficulty. While this applies to business, it can be used for just about everything, from relationships to leadership. You'll hear stories and tips to uplevel your communication and mindset, to gain confidence and inspire action by making your partner look good, conflicts dissolve, and results improve. Partner Up with Amy Carroll is heard every Friday at 7 a.m. US Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Central European Time on Voice America Business.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to the Labenthal Report. If you're listening to the show live, join in on our discussion with questions or comments at 1-866-472-5790. Again, that's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to contact@labenthal.com. Now, back to the Labenthal Report.
All right, I'm Michael Hartzman. I'm back with Dominic Tavella and Jordan Kimmel. And fellas, on the last show, I compared Professor Siegel to Lou Gehrig. And maybe that's not fair because he really is a living legend. You know, and Lou departed many, many years ago. But it's such a great opportunity to have him share his thoughts unfettered, unfiltered, and it really is a breath of fresh air that we get to do that with someone like Professor Siegel.
So obviously a large amount of gratitude for his time, which is incredibly valuable, but I want to
wisdom tree for in getting him on.
The roots of this podcast really were that we get to speak to people like Professor Siegel and other experts that we've had, and we get to have these kind of conversations. And how often do we get asked the question, how did you know to do that? And you go, well, I'm literally able to speak to some of the brightest people on the planet, and he's certainly one of them, right? Not only did he made a very optimistic call, but very grounded in what his rational, reasoning was in making those calls. So I'm so happy that our own clients and other people watching the podcast can participate in understanding this process.
Yeah, and Jordan, I know you many weeks ago were very opinionated on another call that we did, not on the podcast, but with our advisors about SPACs. And you were kind of dubious about them, and I remember I think you said they never end well.
Well,
and I was just curious, I'm sure you must have felt some degree of satisfaction kind of basically hearing Professor Siegel, for the most part, agree with you. He didn't say that exactly, but he kind of had the same feeling about some of the speculation that's been going on.
Well, some SPACs might work out okay, but as investors and fiduciaries, it's important that we actually know what we're doing and where we're putting money. And I remember, we've been around a long time. There used to be something called reverse mergers. And frankly, Berkshire Hathaway was a reverse merger. So there's a needle in a haystack, but for the most part, these are silly spots that for speculation, and they're great for the issuer. And in the zero-sum game, there's a lot of losers. But I think that the message that the professor gave us, which I think is so important, is sometimes you hear that Wall Street's just a gamble. It's just a casino, if you will. And the reality, it's nothing but that. If you're willing to dig, there are public companies that are required to divulge all kinds of information. And if you're willing to do the homework and you're willing to look deep and know what you're buying, there's a lot of the market that is not excessively priced and not a casino. And I'm really glad he spent the time to just break through that comment that not everything is turning on the TV and spinning the wheel and thinking what you're going to do next. That's a loser's game.
Right. And on the flip side of that, it's also somewhat of a sense of relief to hear him talk about value stocks, right? And we think of value, they're boring, they're predictable, they pay dividends. The example I used to give of a value company back in the day was Sears Roebuck, right? Okay. To me, it was the typical value stock. You went into the basement, that's where the tools were. You stayed upstairs, that's where the clothing was. It was predictable, right? And to hear now that value is leading the way is also, to me, a breath of fresh air and should give our clients some comfort that boring is beautiful again.
I want to take that just one step further, Mike. And he spent an awful lot of time about where the bond market is today and where he thinks it's going to be over the next couple of years and the importance of buying high quality, good quality long term, but also the importance of rotating your portfolio and what worked last year. And he mentioned, you didn't want to own anything with a bad balance sheet last year. You didn't want to own anything that was unsturdy in the way it was built, a company or a bond. But you need to change and evolve with where the economic cycle is. And that's our strength, right? We never sit on our hands. But the importance of you can't buy a 30-year bond or a 30-year stock. Close your eyes and hope and pray that it all works out.
Right. Hey, Dom, you're bringing up something super important because, again, we're not media guys. We're actually in the business reviewing portfolios every day from referrals that are meeting us. And, here's the most interesting thing. People who are trying to be conservative and eke out a little income and not take big risks are actually getting sometimes hammered in the wrong securities, not because they're taking too much risk, but when Professor talked about dividend companies and, one of our probably most attractive offerings where people are asking us every day, how can you find these companies with dividend increases that actually go up in price? And I think there's a lot of public money right now that are in bonds, and the professor is very clear, if they don't talk to somebody and figure out a safe place to go, that's an asset that trying to be conservative might actually, strangely enough, hurt them the most in the next couple of years if they don't find a better home for it.
They don't find a better home for it, or if they're overweighted in those bonds. Because I don't want to suggest to any of our clients ever that they need to sell their bonds, right? I don't think it boils down to one asset class is going to outshine another for a period of time. I think it also boils down to asset allocation, Jordan.
Diversification.
So
100%.
Please, anyone, we're not indicating or implying that you need to sell your bonds or need to sell your bonds 6 months from now.
100%.
Far from
right.
That.
100%. Diversification. And bonds have a place if the duration is short enough.
Mm-hmm.
And again, so when we say bonds, we want to make sure that they're in the right bonds, the right mm-hmm. duration. And by no means this is a sell everything or buy anything call.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for bringing that up. We spend an awful lot of time, especially on our weekly call. There are certain sectors of the bond market you would have gotten hurt, really hurt this year. And there are actually certain sectors of the bond market that actually have done very well.
Right.
And that back to this theme of mine that you need to rotate the portfolio, you need to rebalance actively. And we run balanced portfolios, so we're never going to be out of the bond market per se, but we need to know opportunistically where you need to put those eggs today versus where they were a year ago. And I can and will make the same argument about the stock market. Many of these companies that did extraordinarily well a year ago are not this year's winners. And some of the worst stocks a year ago, because the economy was closed, terrible stocks to own a year ago are this year's winners, right? So this concept of you got to change your clothing depending on the weather report. You got to change the portfolio based on where we are in the economic cycle.
Yeah, and to your point, just to put a bow on this, Dominic, you and I did a call yesterday morning with one of the largest fixed income managers on the planet, and we asked about munis, and I thought he was going to be a little bearish and be a little worried about how some of these large cities like New York and LA are going to recover from these huge deficits that have been created from the pandemic and people working from home, and he basically had a completely opposite take on that. So he was very bullish about the muni space, and he laid out a very logical explanation why. And so here you go, right? We spend the time talking to these experts, and really, you know, our job is to calm our clients down, but their job is, as I've said before, to calm us down and lay out the case.
Yeah, Mike, that's an excellent example, right? So, you know, the latest package that came out of Washington helped states a great deal, helped their balance sheets a great deal. The next one coming into Pike will probably do similar things. There's been less issuance in the municipal bond market. Taxes are certainly going up, so there'll be more demand in the municipal bond market. People will be trying to save on paying federal and state income taxes. So if you look at the supply-demand cycle in that specific area, you could make an argument that these are things that we would want to hold in our portfolios. We'll ultimately make that decision whether we should or shouldn't, whether we do believe these experts or not, and whether the arguments make sense. But clearly, it's this inside inquisitive part of our process that gives us the knowledge, hopefully, to make informed decisions.
Well, you know, same note, Dom. I think, again, it's a privilege when you have a base the size of Labenthal that really can get the ears and private discussions with the largest managers that you use in the portfolios. And, you know, that when you paint the brush, bonds are this, or stocks are that, or real estate is that, you know, people are really not doing their homework. You have to get much more granular. And
Jordan, I want to interrupt you on purpose I'd like you to expand on it, but you've been pounding the table for a year that dividend, high quality, strong balance sheet, dividend paying companies, just a place you had to park some of your money into. And that's been, without a doubt, one of our best performing asset classes. I know Dr. Siegel brought it up, but you've been pounding the table on that one for over a year.
Right. Well, you know what? The whole point here, Dom, is that we're not trying to hit home runs. We're not trying to be IPO flippers here. What we are is providing growth and income, but also growth of income. Imagine if you get a raise every year through the companies that you just own sitting back that raise their dividends year in and year out. And it's a process, Dom. There's a lot of work that goes involved. We're not picking the highest dividends. We're not picking the companies that are over-leveraged and may stumble, not pay their dividends. But when you have companies that raise their dividend year after year, you know what comes below that? The price goes up because the yield can't go up forever. It's got to become a fair yield, if you will.
And so that also is an inflation protection tool, right, Jordan? That also adds some appreciation in value that provides a asset protection, inflation protection to your portfolio.
Right. And you know what? When we're yielding well over 4% and you hear this or that, you don't rush to run to back to the bank to point whatever they're paying. You know, these are the most solid companies. And again, we're not saying we love stocks. I'm far from that guy. I'm more discriminating. And to get into our separately managed accounts, companies have to have a whole lot going for them before they pass through our screens. You know that.
And Jordan, one of our earliest guests that you were able to secure for us was Sam Stovall. And I mentioned to him that night that I was at a conference with him in Manhattan, and that was the first time I heard the expression dividend aristocrats, which is exactly what you just said. A company that raises their dividend, not just pays their dividend, but right, raises their dividend year in and year out, which is not an easy thing to do.
Right. Well, we're proud of our portfolios, and we work every day to grind to make them right. So that right down the middle, singles and doubles, increasing income, and we leave it right there.
So we're gonna end the show in a baseball analogy. I like it.
Go for it. Third inning. Jeremy's saying third inning. We'll be happy if they if there's a few more innings. But as far as I'm concerned, we know we come in every day and take another at bat and take nothing for granted.
And Mike, well, I'm just grateful it wasn't a golf analogy, so I'll leave it.
Well, it is baseball season, so I'm happy to have the baseball analogy, fellas. Doubleheader tonight for the Mets, so perfect timing.
All right, wrap us up here.
All right, well, Dom, any closing thoughts, or just we'll see you next week.
Looking forward to another day in paradise, and we'll see how the markets open tomorrow.
All right, well, stay safe, everybody, and thank you for joining us this evening. Thanks, Dom. Thanks, Jordan.
Good night. Thanks again.
Good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Labenthal Report. Dominic, Michael, and Jordan will be back for our next program, airing next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time and 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a great week.